start.
The second and final series ended, but only to be repeated very, very many times on Radio 4. Meanwhile, The Hitchhiker's Guide continued to evolve, becoming successively a BBC TV series, a stage show, and a five-part trilogy that made the name Douglas Adams a household one in all but the most distant reaches of the western spiral arm of the galaxy. The Islington flat, whose telephone number was accidentally featured in episode one, received more unwanted calls than the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation complaints department, and reported sightings of the actors, both on TV and radio, are even now occurring on a regular basis. Two of them in particular had to come to terms with stardom on a truly interstellar scale. No longer was Simon Jones, alias Arthur Dent, able to blend himself into human society and remain nicely inconspicuous.
The most extraordinary incident was when I was walking down Central Park South in New York City in a really cold day, so I was completely wrapped up in muffler and scarf, heavy overcoat, hat pulled down over my eyes, wearing a pair of glasses, and along came this cool chick on roller skates, who, as she cruised by, said, "Hi, Arthur." And off she went. I had hardly time to spin around. I was so astonished.
I used to get asked to do interviews on chat shows, and DJs like to have me on their programs and things. And they always asked me to do the voice. And at the beginning, I said, you know, I can't. I've got to be in a cupboard, and I've got to tweak all these things. But then I discovered if I just picked up a BBC waste paper basket, those tin, funny, green, grey things, and put it near the mic with my head in it, I could go,
"Life, don't talk to me about life. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and you asked me to park your car. I don't know."
"I'm just a robot and I know my place. A metal servant to the human race. I work my can off trying to satisfy. I know they'll disconnect me by and by.
I had a friend called John Sinclair who was a record producer, and he approached me and said, "I want to do The Sorcerer's Apprentice and I want you just to talk through it. Just say whatever comes into your head and we'll make a story as we go along." And we tried it out. It didn't really work. And I said, "You know, the character I'm playing called Marvin is a very good idea. Why don't we write a song for him?" And so really, that's really how it came about. He wrote the music and I wrote the words. And it became quite successful. Of course, we had to involve Douglas because we suddenly thought we're sort of treading all over his copyright, really. So we invited Douglas along to the studio and he brought his guitar and he sang a few songs that he thought the world should hear. And we said, "They're very nice, Douglas. Yeah. Look, is it all right? We just give you a credit." And he was fine about it.
The record reached number 52 in the charts. Another 10 slots higher, and it might just have had some greater cosmic significance. But just what was the appeal of The Hitchhiker's Guide? It's too bizarrely improbable a coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly successful could have evolved purely by chance. Back to that standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom, Geoffrey Perkins.
Sneakily, I think that one of the big reasons for the success of Hitchhikers in terms of the show itself was that it was the successor to Monty Python, but of course sounded nothing like Monty Python. I think that Monty Python effectively stopped people doing any sketch show with the same sensibility for at least another 15 years. You just couldn't do those sort of sketches without people saying, "That's just a rip-off of Monty Python." What you could do is do something that has all the sensibility and the same sense of humour, but is so different in its overall style and genre that nobody would ever have realised it. And I think that's what Hitchhikers was.
As series go, that was all very fine and pleasant. But this extraordinary phenomenon is still, even now, continuing to evolve.